Jinara Gareng Gareng grew up in Longreach in Queensland in the only Aboriginal family in town. Her mother was determined to raise her children in a way that left no room for them to be called, quote, dirty blacks. But what she didn't anticipate was that those closest to her daughter would end up abusing her. In the 90s, Jinara revealed the sexual abuse she was subjected to by Catholic priests as a young girl and then a teenager. This traumatic experience is now told in her new memoir, A Long Way From No Go. Jinara Gareng Gareng is a Waka Waka Woolly Woolly traditional owner from central Queensland and one of Australia's leading Indigenous academics. Jinara, welcome to RN Breakfast.
Well, good morning, Fran. Thank you.
This memoir, A Long Way From No Go, is only 200 pages long, but gee, you canvass a lot of life and a lot of trials and triumphs. At the age of 60, why did you decide to write your story, Jinara?
Well, I actually started this in 1995, the year that we put Leah Wright in jail, as a journal during the court case and the whole business. And it
Leah Wright, for everybody listening, was a Catholic priest, yeah?
Yes, the first Catholic priest in Queensland to be charged and sent to jail. And it was my way of, I guess, talking about it to myself and beginning the healing process. And it morphed into a book or a novel based on fact, because I started to write the story of my life. And I just really did it for myself. And it sat on the shelf until 2010. I finished it in 1998, 2000, sat on the shelf till 2010, when after showing it to a couple of my friends and getting their feedback, I thought, well, maybe this is worth reading, because I didn't know I was a writer in that regard. Mm. You know, I was a public servant writer or an academic writer. And I put it into the David Unipen Award for Unpublished Writers in the Queensland Premier's Literary Awards, and it became a finalist. And that's when Kathy Lewis from Wild Dingo Press found it. Okay. And asked me if we would write it as a memoir.
It's actually a story of great achievement over a lifetime. But and that in itself is extraordinary, given the abuse you document that you witnessed at the hands of several Catholic priests, which began very young in your life, didn't it? I mean, you were just a little girl when it happened.
I was small.
You were a small girl, and Father Mick Hayes and Father Grove Johnson both abused you back in the 60s.
Hmm, that's true.
And how do you... It took you a long time to open up about that. You mentioned Leo Wright in 1995 when you brought that out against Father Leo Wright. What was it? That was a long time after the abuse too. What triggered you to finally speak about it publicly?
Yes, the story in the Who magazine in 1995 when I came back from India, and I was an avid reader of the Who back then, and I saw the story of Jared Risdale, and I had no idea. You know, you just don't think that you could do anything about something that happened so long ago. And I saw that story and I thought, wow, you can put them in jail. Maybe I should contact the number at the bottom of the page of this story. And when I did, I was astounded to discover that he had actually abused other children, which really galvanised me forward. Because up till then, I really thought it was just me and I was a lone person.
And that's common. A lot of people silent because they think it's just them and they feel it's all about them and they're bad. And that can really wreck lives. How would you describe, as I say, your life is a life of great achievement. How would you describe the impact of the abuse on your life?
Well, people can read the book because it was pretty full on. I spent most of my life suicidal or going in and out of it, despite doing the things that I did. Mm. I think it was my education and my mother's drive and my drive to achieve and be something and not just be that. And also I didn't want to end my life really, and I didn't really want to be doing nothing. I wanted to use what I had, my gifts I had. And I'd learnt very early in my life as a training champion swimmer to drive through pain and push forward and to achieve, and I liked winning. Mm-hmm. That competitiveness made me, I guess, have that drive, and I always wanted to fulfill my mother's dreams, I guess, for me, and all of us did in our family. And so you kind of bury that stuff and you leave it there, and then it always comes up later on, because people who've been abused often suffer post-traumatic stress disorder, and those things emerge later in your life.
Yep.
So it was triggered by a number of things that then meant that I had to face it, as well as deal with living my life and continuing that desire to make a difference and do things. And I was put in positions in my life that enabled me to really feel that I could make a difference and I could do something. So that kept me going.
As you say, it always does come up later in life. And again, the Royal Commission has brought this up again for you for shocking abuse that happened to you as a little girl at the hands of those two priests I mentioned earlier, Father Mick Hayes and Father Grove Johnson. I think they were dead by the time you spoke to the Royal Commission. Again, that must have been traumatic for you going through all that again. Why did you decide to contact the Royal Commission? This is a long time after you'd already gone through the Father Leo Wright accusation.
You know, the Royal Commission was a big deal. When sexual abuse survivors have the opportunity to be supported publicly and to tell their story, even if it's just to an individual in a room, that's incredibly healing. Mm. In The Red Earth, which was the foreword to this book, I'd written about the possibility of a Royal Commission just as part of the story into institutional abuse. And when that came about, I was rah-rah, you know, this is wonderful. I went along because I would never have the opportunity to ever, I thought I wouldn't have the opportunity to ever go forward with charging those priests. It's a really difficult thing to do. Mm. It took many, many years of my life to deal with and to recover from just from doing the first one. So I felt like I could just not do it again. And that was an opportunity for me to go and have a meeting with the commissioner and tell her about the other priests in Central Queensland that I knew about. Mm. And I did it because I knew many of my mob, many other Aboriginal people, many not in my immediate family but extended family, cousins and people that I'd known and worked with throughout my life, had committed suicide because of sexual abuse, or they'd fell into alcoholism or addiction or ended up in prison or all sorts of dreadful things, ill health, and never been able to tell their story. So they were powerless and voiceless. And not only was I doing it for myself, but I felt like if I did this publicly, at least maybe one other Aboriginal person would be able to follow those footsteps or walk alongside, and I could walk alongside that person.
Yeah. And, Janara, I think what's shocking in your telling of this story too is that when, back in 95, when you did make the allegations and found out others too had been abused by Father Leo Wright, the church really didn't respond to you in any kind of positive or sympathetic or supportive way. And again and again and again, and that went on for a long time. Do you think that the church has learnt anything through the Royal Commission? Have you seen any change? Or what did that impact of the church response have on you?
Well, they've been forced to change as a result of this public exposure. And I think if they had not been publicly exposed, that may not have happened, or it may have taken a lot longer. The impact on me was extremely challenging because I really didn't know what I was doing. I was just going to see every priest and bishop that I knew to tell them the story, because there was no scheme at the time. They had not been moving towards it. They didn't start until the late 90s. And, you know, I went from people who didn't want to hear it, people who heard it and, you know, told me to go to confession. Oh, my God. And then one bishop cried, the archbishop, I should say, cried because he didn't understand it.
Yep.
And I don't recall any empathy, even though every now and then I got, okay, well, we're going to deal with it. But then they would keep backtracking. But then they eventually had to face it because it was the decade of Indigenous reconciliation. And I kept bringing that up, saying, you should reconcile with me, never mind talking about it publicly. So eventually we got there, but it took a long time.
Sure. Janara, it's a story of one woman, but as you say, it's a story I think that will resonate and perhaps help a lot of other Indigenous Australians, women in particular. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Fran.
Janara Goreng-Goreng, her book A Long Way From No-Go is now online and the paperback will be available soon by Wild Dingo Press. And as I say, it's a story not of institutional abuse. It's a story of a girl, a Catholic girl, trying to do the right thing, being abused by priests, people she was taught to trust. And if you or someone you know need help, you can call Lifeline on 13 11 14.